Rod tore it off and read in growing wonder. He read it again on his way back to his cabin. Sally stood when he came in.
"Rod, that's the strangest look I've ever seen."
"Got a letter," he said.
"Oh, news from home?"
"Sort of."
She smiled, but her voice was puzzled. "How is everyone? Your father all right?"
Rod seemed very nervous and excited, but he was too cheerful to have got bad news. So what was upsetting him? It was as if he had some task to carry out, something he wanted to do but was afraid of. "My family's fine. So is yours. You'll know about that soon enough. Senator Fowler is in New Scotland." She looked at him incredulously.
"Uncle Ben is out here? But why?"
"He says he got worried about you. Nobody to take care of you, so he had to..." She put her tongue out at him and grabbed for the message blank. Rod dodged nimbly, despite the gravity and a half acceleration. "All right," he told her. He laughed, but it was strained. The Emperor sent him, as his personal representative, to chair an imperial commission to negotiate with the Moties. Rod paused. "We're both appointed to the commission." She looked at him blankly. Slow comprehension invaded her eyes. This was professional recognition beyond anything she'd imagined.
"Congratulations, Commissioner," Rod laughed.
He caught her wrist in both hands and held her at arm's length. "The Lord President of His Majesty's Commission Extraordinary also asks me when we're getting married. I think it's a pretty fair question."
"But I... Rod, we..."
She caught her breath. "By God, I've got you at a loss for words. Just once you're not talking." He took advantage of the opportunity to kiss her. Then again. That lasted a long time.
"I think I'd better read that letter," she said, when they parted. "If you please."
"You still haven't answered your uncle's question, and I won't let you read it until you do."
"His question."
Her eyes flashed.
"Rod Blaine, if I do marry anyone, if, mind you, he's going to ask me himself."
"All right. Lady Sandra Liddell Leonofna Bright Fowler, will you marry me?" The banter was gone from his voice, and although he tried to keep his grin, he lost that too. He looked like a 4-year-old about to sit on Father Christmas's lap for the first time.
"When we get back to New Scotland?" "Yes, of course I'll marry you." "New Scotland? Rod, your father will expect us to be married at court. All our friends are on Sparta."
"I think maybe you'd better read that message, sweetheart. We may not get to Sparta for a while." He handed her the flimsy and perched on the arm of the chair she sank into. "It's this part." He pointed. "First reaction here, uncertain whether to make you hero or villain. Stop. Loss of MacArthur not greeted with joy at Admiralty. Stop. Cranston exploded. Stop. Armstrong said, quote, 'How in hell can anyone lose a battle cruiser?' Close quote. Stop. Paragraph. Kutuzov report in your favor. Stop. Kutuzov takes full responsibility for loss. Stop. Kutuzov reports possible superior castes Moties could have cleared MacArthur of vermin, but his decision risk of compromise of imperial technological secrets too great. Stop. Kutuzov still undecided extent of Moti threat, but suggests Admiralty assemble large battle fleet. Stop. Horvath report states Moti's friendly, no fleet needed, and Moti's, quote, greatest opportunity in history, close quote. Stop. Problem in my lap. Stop.
Ours too, Rod said. Read on.
Paragraph. By order of sovereign, I am now Lord President of Imperial Commission Extraordinary for negotiating with aliens. Stop. By personal direction of His Majesty Roderick Lord Blaine - that is you, but you almost blew it losing your ship. Stop. Do not make habit of that - and Lady Sandra Bright appointed commissioners. Stop. Commission has full authority to act in name of sovereign. Stop. Commissioners will remain in New Scotland unless advisable convey alien representatives to Sparta. Stop. Paragraph. If Commission concludes aliens pose threat or potential threat to Empire, Commission will act in concert with Viceroy Trans Coalsack to take such immediate measures as seem advisable. Stop. Any suggestions? Interrogative. Paragraph. Rod, unless those Motis are simple farmers, and this probe makes me sure they ain't, you and Sally are going to be out here a long time. Stop. Presume you have retained sanity, so are engaged to Sally. Stop. When is wedding? Interrogative. Your father sends blessings. Stop. So do I. Stop. Marquis expects you two will be married by next time he sees you. Stop. If you think Marquis and I have arranged this, you ain't seen nothing yet. Stop. His Majesty approves immediate wedding. Stop. Your mother and Empress send blessings. Stop.
But what if I said no? Sally demanded. That's the most arrogant thing I've ever seen.
But you didn't say no. You said yes.
He leaned down to kiss her hard. She struggled away, and he saw she was genuinely angry.
Damn it.
Her voice was very low and clear.
Damn. His Majesty approves. God's teeth. If I turned you down now, it'd be high treason.
I did ask first, he pointed out.
And you answered first.
That was clever.
Oh, stop looking like a little boy.
Yes, I want to marry you.
I don't much like being commanded to do something I wanted to do anyway.
He studied her.
You were out from under for a long time.
I never was.
What?
The obligations that go with the titles. First, you were en route to study primitive cultures, your own free choice. I went to the academy for my Vonderjahr. Then you were in the prison camp, but even in that hellhole, you weren't under any authority you could respect. He was choosing his words with great care. Sally was red with anger. Then MacArthur, as a guest. Under my authority then, remember? And you respected the fact to such an extent.
All right.
I stowed away when we captured the Crazy Eddie probe.
You know why.
Too right. Then New Scotland, where you were practically the highest rank around. You enjoyed that, didn't you? The few people above you weren't interested in making you do anything. And on to Moat Prime, doing exactly what you wanted to do in life. You were out from under for a long time. Now you're back in the box.
That's what it feels like.
Rod flicked the flimsy in her hand.
Arrogant as hell.
Right. It jarred me, but not the way it got to you. I've been under orders for a long time. All my life.
It's the first time you've been ordered to marry anyone, I take it.
Yeah. But we've both been expecting something like that, haven't we? Politically, from an Empire standpoint, our marriage is just too good an alliance to pass up. We get the privileges, the property, the titles, and now the bill comes in. Blind luck we love each other, because we owe it to...
To whom? She demanded.
Rod grinned helplessly. The idea was irresistibly funny. To Kevin Renner. The Empire exists for the purpose of making it easier for Renner to play tourist. We owe this to Renner, and we're paid well for the privilege, and he's gonna collect.
She was awed.
Does he really think that way? My God, he does. He ordered me to your cabin.
What?
He what?
She giggled.
Fantastic.
We ought to ask him and see what he does. Let me finish reading this, Rod. Paragraph. I have discretion in naming other members of commission. Stop. Will expect your help. Stop. Everybody in 50 parsecs wants on commission. Stop. Given powers His Majesty delegated to us, don't blame them. Stop. Your first task is helping me to fill out commission. Stop. Second will be arranging evidence and witness list. Stop. Paragraph. Admiral Kutuzov has orders to put you aboard message sloop for return, best possible speed to New Scotland. Stop. Bring Sally if you think best, and flight surgeon approves. Stop. Admiral will assume responsibility for Horace Berry. Stop. Get moving. Stop. Kiss Sally for me. Stop. Break. Break. Regards, Benjamin Bright Fowler, comma, Senator, open parentheses, Lord President, Imperial Commission Extraordinary, acting for His Majesty Leonidas the Ninth. Close parentheses, break, message ends. XX.
Am I going in the message sloop? She asked.
That's up to you. You're in condition. Want to?
Yes. There are a lot of things to arrange before the Motis get there. My God, we've got to settle things about the Motis. And there's the wedding. Ron, do you realize how big a deal the marriage of Crucis Court and the Fowler heir will be in a provincial capital? I'll need three secretaries. Uncle Ben's not going to be any use, and we've got to arrange for a reception for the Motis and... Oh, all right. Where were we?
47. Homeward Bound. Kutuzov and Mikhailov went all out in preparing for Rod and Sally's farewell dinner party. Lenin's cooks worked all day to turn out a traditional Ekaterina banquet. Dozens of courses, soups, pastries, roasts, stuffed grape leaves from the hydroponics farm, shish kebab, an endless stream of food. And between courses, there were thimble glasses of vodka. It was impossible to talk during the meal, for as soon as one course was finished, MacArthur's stewards brought another. Or, to give a respite for digestion, Lenin's Marines performed dances transported from the Russian steppes to St. Ekaterina's hills and preserved 900 years by fanatics like Kutuzov. Finally, the bandsmen left and the stewards removed the dishes, leaving the guests with tea and more vodka. Lenin's junior midshipman toasted the emperor, and Captain Mikhailov toasted the Tsarevich Alexander, while the admiral beamed.
"He can put on quite a show when he's not scared silly," Renner whispered to Cargill. "Never thought I'd say that. Here it comes. The Tsar himself's going to give a toast. Who's left?"
The admiral stood and lifted his glass.
"I will reserve my toast for one moment," he said thickly.
It was possible that the endless glasses of vodka had affected him, but no one could be certain.
"Captain Blaine, when next we meet, roles will be reversed. Then you must tell me how to deal with Motis. I do not envy you that task."
"What's Horvath scowling about?" Cargill whispered. "He looks like somebody put a frog in his bunk."
"Aye, is it nae possible he wants a place on yon commission?" Sinclair asked.
"Bet that's it," Renner put in. "I wouldn't mind being on it myself."
"You and everybody else," Cargill said. "Now shut up and listen."
"There is more we must congratulate Lord Blaine about," Kutuzov was saying, "and that is why I reserve toast. Chaplain Hardy has announcement."
David Hardy stood. His smile was broad and merry.
"Lady Sandra has given me the honor of formally announcing her engagement to Lord Commissioner Blaine," Hardy said. "I have already extended my private congratulations. Let me be the first to give them publicly."
Everyone spoke at once, but the admiral cut them off.
"And now, my toast," Kutuzov said, "to the future Marquis of Crucis."
Sally blushed as she sat, while the others stood and lifted their glasses.
"Well, it's official now," she thought. "No way to get out of it, if I wanted to. Not that I do, but it's so inevitable now."
"Also, to Lady Commissioner," Kutuzov added. Everyone drank again. "And to Lord Commissioner, long life and many children. May you protect our empire when you negotiate with Motis."
"Our thanks," Rod said. "We'll do our best, and of course I'm the luckiest man alive."
"Perhaps Her Ladyship will speak?"
Kutuzov prompted. She stood, but she could think of nothing to say.
"Thank you all," she blurted, and sat.
"Out of words again?" Rod asked, wickedly. "And with all these people around, I've lost a rare opportunity." After that, the formality vanished. Everyone pressed around them.
"All the happiness in the world," Cargill said. He pumped Rod's hand vigorously.
"I really mean that, sir. And the Empire couldn't have made a better choice for the Commission."
"You will nae be married before we arrive," Sinclair asked. "'Twould nae be fair to be married in my city without me present."
"We don't quite know when," Sally told him. "But certainly not before Lenin gets in. You're all invited to the wedding, of course. So are all the Motis, she added to herself. And I wonder what they'll make of it. The party dissolved into a kaleidoscope of small groups, with Rod and Sally at the focus. The wardroom table was lowered into the deck to give them more room, as stewards circulated with coffee and tea.
"You will, of course, allow me to offer my congratulations," Barry told them smoothly,
"and I hope you will not think I am trying to bribe you when I send a wedding gift."
"Why would anyone think that?" Sally asked innocently. "Thank you, Mr. Barry."
If her first remark had been ambiguous, her smile was warm enough to cover it. Sally didn't care for Barry's reputation, but he'd been charming enough while she'd known him. If only he'd get over this insane fear of Motis. Eventually, Rod was able to move away from the center of the party. He found Dr. Horvath in a corner of the room.
"You've been avoiding me all night, Doctor," Rod said affably. "I'd like to know why."
Horvath tried to smile, but realized it was thin. His brows knitted for a moment, then relaxed in decision.
"No point in anything but honesty. Blaine, I didn't want you on this expedition.
You know why?"
"Okay, your man Renner convinced me you couldn't have done anything else about the probe. We've had our differences. But all in all, I have to approve of the way you've handled the command. With your rank and experience, it was inevitable that you'd be given a place on the commission."
"I hadn't expected it," Rod answered. "In hindsight, and from Sparta's viewpoint, I suppose you're right.
Is that why you're upset with me?"
"No," Horvath said honestly.
"As I said, it was inevitable, and I don't let laws of nature upset me. But I expected a place on that commission, Blaine. I was senior scientist on this expedition. I had to fight for every scrap of information we got. By God, if they're giving two seats to expedition members, I've earned a place."
"And Sally hasn't," Rod said coldly.
"She was very useful," Horvath said. "And she's charming and bright, and of course you're hardly going to be objective about her, but honestly, Blaine, do you really equate her competence with mine?"
Rod's frown vanished. He smiled broadly and almost laughed. Horvath's professional jealousy was neither comic nor pathetic, merely inevitable. As inevitable as his belief that the appointment questioned his competence as a scientist.
"Relax, Doctor," Rod said. "Sally isn't on that commission because of scientific ability any more than I am. The Emperor is not concerned with competence, but interest." He almost said loyalty. "And that wouldn't have done at all. In a way, you're not being named immediately," Rod emphasized that word, "is a compliment." Horvath's brows shot up.
"I beg your pardon. You're a scientist, Doctor. Your whole training and really your whole philosophy of life is objectivity, right?"
"More or less," Horvath agreed. "Although since I left the laboratory, you've had to fight for budgets. Even then you've been involved in politics only to help your colleagues do the things you'd do if you were free of administrative duties."
"Well, yes. Thank you. Not many people seem to realize that.
Consequently, your dealings with Motis would be the same. Objective. Non-political. But that may not be the best course for the Empire. Not that you'd be wanting in loyalty, Doctor, but His Majesty knows Sally and I put the Empire first. We've been indoctrinated that way from the day we were born. We can't even pretend to scientific objectivity where imperial interests are concerned. And if that doesn't smooth his feathers, the hell with him."
It did, though. Horvath still wasn't happy, and he obviously wasn't going to give up trying for a seat on the commission. But he smiled and wished Rod and Sally a happy marriage. Rod excused himself and went back to Sally with a feeling of accomplishment.
"But can't we even say goodbye to the Motis?" she was pleading. "Rod, can't you convince him?"
Rod looked helplessly at the Admiral.
"My lady," Kutuzov said heavily, "I do not wish to disappoint you. When Motis arrive in New Scotland, they will be your concern, not mine, and you will then tell me what to do about them. Until that time, Motis are my responsibility, and I intend no changes in policies agreed before they came aboard. Dr. Hardy can deliver any message to them."
What would he do if Rod and I ordered him to let us see them, she thought. As commissioners. But that would make a scene, and Rod seems to think the Admiral's a pretty useful man. They could never work together again if we did that. Besides, Rod might not do it even if I ask him to. Don't push. It's not as if these Motis were special friends, Hardy reminded her. They've had so little contact with people I hardly know them myself. I'm sure that will change when we get to New Scotland. Hardy smiled and changed the subject. I trust you will keep your promise and wait for Lennon before you're married. But I insist you marry us, Sally said quickly. We'll have to wait for you.
Thank you.
Hardy was going to say something else, but Kelly came purposefully across the wardroom and saluted.
Captain, I've got your gear sent off to Hermes and Lady Sally's as well, and them orders did say soonest.
My conscience, Rod laughed. But he's right, Sally. We'd better get ready. He groaned. It's going to be tough facing three grabs after that dinner.
I must leave also, Kutuzov said. I have dispatches to put aboard Hermes.
He smiled awkwardly.
Farewell, my lady. And you also, Captain. Godspeed. You have been good officer.
Why, thank you, sir. Rod looked around the wardroom and spotted Barry across the compartment. Kelly, the Admiral's assuming responsibility for His Excellency.
With your permission, I will continue Gunner Kelly in command of Marine Guards, Kutuzov said.
Certainly, sir. Kelly be damn careful when we get to New Scotland. He may or may not try to escape. I don't have any idea of what he's got to face when we get there, but the orders are plain enough. We're to keep him in custody. He may try to bribe one of your men.
Kelly snorted.
He'd better not.
Yeah. Well, so long, Kelly.
Don't let Nabil put a dagger in your ribs. I'll want you with me on New Scotland.
Yes, sir.
You be careful, Captain. The Marquis will kill me if something happens to you. Told me that before we left Cruces Court.
Kutuzov cleared his throat loudly.
Our guests must leave immediately, he announced, with our final congratulations.
Rod and Sally left the wardroom to a chorus of shouts, some overloud. The party seemed destined to last a long time. The message sloop Hermes was a tiny affair. Her living space was no larger than MacArthur's cutter, although overall she was much bigger. Aft of the life support systems, she was tankage and engines, and little else but access crawlways. They were hardly aboard before they were underway. There was little to do in the tiny ship, and the heavy acceleration made real work impossible anyway. The surgeon's mate examined his passengers at 8-hour intervals to be sure they were able to take Hermes 3Gs, and approved Rod's request that they get it over with sooner and boost up to 3.5 gravs. Under that weight, it was better to sleep as much as possible, and confine mental activities to light conversation. Murkison's eye was enormous behind them when they reached the Alderson point. An instant later, the eye was only a bright red star against the coal sack. It had a small yellow moat. 48. Civilian. They were rushed aboard a landing craft the instant Hermes made orbit around New Scotland. Sally barely had time to say her farewells to the sloop's crew. Then they were strapped in.
Visitors, clear landing boat. Passengers, secure for re-entry.
There were clunks as the airlocks were closed.
Ready, sir?
The pilot called.
Yeah.
The retros fired. It wasn't a smooth re-entry at all. The pilot was in too much of a hurry. They dropped low over New Scotland's craggy rocks and spouting geysers. When they arrived at the city, they still had too much speed, and the pilot had to circle twice. Then the boat came in slowly, hovered, and settled on the roof landing port of Admiralty House.
"There's Uncle Ben!" Sally shouted.
She rushed forward to fling herself into his arms. Benjamin Bright Fowler was 80 standard years old, and looked it. Before regeneration therapy, men would have guessed he was 50, and in his prime intellectual years. They would have been right about the latter guess. He stood 174 centimeters and massed 90 kilos. A portly, short man, nearly bald, with a fringe of dark hair graying around a shiny dome.
He never wore a hat except in the coldest weather, and usually forgot it then. Senator Fowler was dressed outlandishly, in baggy trousers flaring over soft, polished leather boots. A knee-length and very battered camel's hair coat covered his upper body. His clothes were very expensive, and never properly cared for. His dreamy eyes that tended to water, and his rumpled appearance did not make him an impressive figure. And his political enemies had more than once made the mistake of taking his looks as a sign of his abilities. Sometimes, when the occasion was important enough, he'd let his valet choose his clothes and dress him properly. And then, for a few hours at least, he looked appropriate. He was, after all, one of the most powerful men in the empire. Usually, though, he put on the first thing he found in his wardrobe. And since he would never let his servants throw out anything he'd once liked, he often wore old clothes. He grasped Sally in a bear hug, while she kissed his forehead. Sally was taller than her uncle, and was tempted to plant a kiss on the top of his head. But she knew better. Benjamin Fowler neglected his appearance, and became angry if anyone reminded him of that. But actually, he was a little sensitive about his baldness. He also absolutely refused to allow cosmetic physicians to do anything for it.
"Uncle Ben, I'm glad to see you!"
Sally pushed herself away before he crushed a rib. Then, with mock anger, "You've been rearranging my life. Did you know that radiogram would make Rod propose to me?" Senator Fowler looked puzzled.
"You mean he hadn't already?"
He pretended to examine Rod with microscopic care.
"He looks normal enough.
Must be internal damage."
"How are you, Rod? You look good, boy."
He enfolded Rod's hand in his own. His grip was strong enough to hurt. With his left hand, Fowler extracted his pocket computer from beneath the disreputable folds of his thick coat.
"Sorry to rush, kids, but we're late. Come on, come on."
He turned and darted for the elevator, leaving them to follow helplessly. They went down 12 floors, and Fowler led them around twists of corridors. Marines stood guard outside a door.
"Inside, inside," the senator urged.
"Can't keep all those admirals and captains waiting. Come on, Rod."
The Marines saluted, and Rod absently responded. He entered in bewilderment. A large room, paneled in dark wood, with an enormous marble table across its length. 5 captains and 2 admirals were seated at the table. A legal officer sat at a smaller desk, and there were places for a recorder and clerks. As soon as Rod entered, someone intoned,
"This court of inquiry is now in session. Step forward and be sworn. State your name."
"Your name, Captain?" the admiral at the center of the table snapped. Rod didn't recognize him. He knew only half the officers in the room.
"You do know your name, don't you?"
"Yes, sir." "Admiral, I wasn't told I was coming directly to a court of inquiry."
"You know it now. Please state your name."
"Roderick Harold, Lord Blaine, Captain, Imperial Space Navy, formerly Master aboard INS MacArthur."
"Thank you."
They shot questions at him.
"Captain, when did you first learn that the miniature aliens were capable of using tools and performing useful work?"
"Captain, please describe the sterilization procedures you employed."
"Captain, in your judgment, did the aliens outside the ship ever know you had miniatures loose aboard your vessel?"
He answered as best he could. Sometimes one officer would ask a question, only to have another say,
"That's in the report, dammit. Didn't you listen to the tapes?"
The inquiry moved at blinding speed. Suddenly, it was over.
"You may retire for the moment, Captain," the presiding admiral said.
Sally and Senator Fowler were waiting in the hall. There was a young woman in kilts, with a businesslike briefcase, standing with them.
"Miss McPherson, my new social secretary," Sally introduced her.
"Very pleased to meet you, my lord. My lady, I had best be—"
"Certainly, thank you."
McPherson left with a click of heels on marble floors. She had a nice walk.
"Rod," Sally said. "Rod, do you know how many parties we've got to go to?"
"Parties? My God, woman, they're deciding my fate in there, and you—"
"Nonsense," Senator Fowler snapped.
That was decided weeks ago, when Merrill, Cranston, Armstrong, and I listened to Kutuzov's report. There I was, your appointment from His Majesty in my pocket, and you'd gone and lost your ship. It's a good thing your Admiral's an honest man, boy. Damn good thing.